Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everyone. Glenn the Geek here from foggy Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning for January 25th, 2011, episode 62, sponsored by Pfizer Animal Health. Good morning, Horse World.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Bob Dahlman. Welcome to Fort Worth, Texas. Now, the higher they jump, the better they buck, the better you ride, more money to win. It's rodeo time, ladies, let's ride.
You got a rope and ride, buck and
fly. R-O-D-E-O.
Did I mention the Cowboys are hot? Oh, yeah. It's time to rodeo. This ain't no Broadway show. Hold on and don't let go. It's time to ride. This ain't no screw-your game. Need courage to take the pain. 8 seconds to make your name. It's time to ride.
I am bouncing on the ball again this morning. I'm going to pop this damn thing one day, Jamie. I'm going to be on the floor.
That would be great. And I want to say the reason you're so excited is because Glenn gets to talk to a rodeo queen.
That's right. Pretty girls, pretty girls. And I booked this one myself. Didn't even have to have any help from Jennifer.
No, stop. You did it all by yourself. We never would have known that you booked a high school to a college rodeo queen.
No, this is not college. This is like national rodeo queen. This is big time. We had Dakota Misseldine on who a couple months ago, who was 2010 Rodeo Queen. Well, Katie Lynn Barger just won 2011 Rodeo Queen, and I thought it was only appropriate, seeing she's only been crowned for about 10 minutes now, that we should get her on right away. You know, just because, you know, it's our duty.
You know, how do you feel about world peace? What do you plan on doing today? You're leading this one, buddy. Go.
Yep.
I'm
no
excited
problem.
For you.
No problem. I got it covered. Jennifer, what's coming up on the rest of the show?
Today's show is all star-studded. We've got Miss Rodeo USA, Katie Lynn. Is it Barger or Barger?
Barger.
She's from
Texas. Barger.
Sorry, Katie Lynn. We're going with Barger. As you mentioned, Miss Rodeo USA, we have international equine celebrity Molly the Pony, today represented by Kay Harris, and on-target training star Shauna Koresh, and we've got our very own Glenn and Jamie, stars of the world's best morning radio show for the horse addicted.
We're the only morning radio show for the horse addicted. I guess that makes us the best, huh?
So true. Well done.
I wanted to say, too, we had such good luck yesterday. It was so nice to have callers that called in to talk to Daniel Stewart. And we have Shauna Koresh on today at about 10 o'clock. And she is one of the top trainers. She used to work at SeaWorld. She knows all about various forms of training, but especially target training and things like that. So if you have questions for her, she would love to take questions today. Give us a call around 9:50, 10 o'clock. And, you know, any of those training questions, if you're having a sticking point, things like that, she could help you with that. She's a lovely person. We've had her on before, and I think you're going to find her as fascinating as Daniel was yesterday, which is going to be tough to beat. That was fun.
Oh, he was fantastic, man. It's like an education. And I mean, I really did take a lot of notes, and I'm having students come today, and they're going to get it. They are going to be so tired after their day of riding. I mean, Daniel Stewart just inspires. And having Shauna on, which you say target training, and to me, is clicker training the same thing as target training? Because that's what
yes.
I call it.
Yes.
Okay.
Clicker training on target training, yep.
Gotcha. Okay. So, yeah, it was really, I was kind of like, last time we talked to her, really wasn't familiar with it at all. And this, after talking to her, I really think that stuff is cool, that you can teach your horse to do all sorts of stuff. So I'm hoping she can give me some advice with the puppies with the clicker training. Maybe I need to go get a clicker for the puppies.
There you
go.
Sure
you can do that.
I'm sure you can. We've never done it. Have we ever done it with our dogs, Jennifer? I don't think so. But
we've not used clickers on our dogs. I've used them on the horses, but I've never used them with the dogs. A friend of ours has used it on her cat. She taught her cat all kinds of tricks.
Hey, Jen.
Yeah?
Between you and me, have you ever used clicker training on Glenn?
Yeah, but he doesn't know it.
Food training works.
Yeah. He hears the refrigerator door open, and he knows that
that's
too.
That's it. I'm right there. I'm there every time. What do you need, dear?
I love it.
I have read that it is useful on humans as well.
Yeah. Good boy, Glenn. Put it down. Put it down. Good boy. Click, click.
Hey, Jamie, I wanted to give our best to Michelle, our friend, poor Michelle down there in Baton Rouge, where we had her on, what, a week or two ago, talking about her horse Sprite, the Cleveland Bay. And she had colic and had to go in for surgery, and she was back home, and she was doing better. Well, better ended, and she ended up back in the hospital a couple days ago and had to go back into surgery again last night. And apparently they found a lot of, what are they called, contusions or lesions?
Adhesions,
thank you. And the doctor said he probably wouldn't even be able to get them all, but she did survive the surgery. All I know, the latest is that she survived the surgery last night. I do not know how she's doing. So our best to Michelle and Sprite, and we're all thinking about you. That's tough.
Poor pony. On a side note, Glenn, we were talking with the John from Eventing Nation last week about all these people that are applying to be the U.S. team's coach, right, and chief to keep. And we do have another candidate to announce his application for the job, and that was Jimmy Walford.
This is for the Eventers, the United States Eventers. Yep.
Yes, sorry, United States Eventing Team. And it was Jimmy Watford, who is my favorite horse author, my favorite guy to watch coach, my favorite guy to read. I think he's fantastic, and I definitely think that this is the guy. This is the man for the job, and let me tell you why. David O'Connor starts coaching. Karen O'Connor can't ride. Philip Dutton and Bobby Costello coach. Philip can't ride. Jimmy Walford can coach, and everybody can ride. There's no conflict at all. And what he said in an interview is that he's been preparing for many years to have no conflict. And I just wanted to read you guys a text or a Twitter from Eco Gold, which is the Canadian team. It's a sponsor of ours, but they also go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have to disclaim, they are a sponsor of ours. Yep.
Yeah, they're a sponsor of ours, and they're up in Canada. And I loved it. Samantha retweeted a tweet from Eco Gold, and it says, okay, you can give us David back now. Because David is currently the Canadian coach. So he's an American coaching Canada, and he was going to leave Canada to come back and coach America. But now Canada's like, okay, we'll keep him now. Okay, we'll keep him. You guys can have Jimmy Walford. So way cool, Eco Gold. I love it. That was very funny. Very, very funny.
What is your thought? Well, I think that Jennifer's probably jumping up and down. She's a big Jimmy Walford fan, and I'm sure that you're excited about that, aren't you?
Yeah, I love his coaching style. In that, I really think he is the same kind of coach that Jack LaGoff was. In that he can bring out the best in any rider, because you know when you're the coach of the team, hello, it's not like you're telling people to keep their heels down. You know, it's a whole different story, and Yeah, I'm definitely getting behind Jimmy Wofford on this one. You bet.
Oh, I love it. Can I tell you a funny story about Jimmy Wofford? And this is just, I think, speaks of his personality outside of the coaching world. But I was interviewing, I was applying for a job with Denny Emerson, and it was down at the Foxhall Cup, which is down in Atlanta. It was that big three stars that they had for a long time. And I'm carrying around a resume, and I'm looking completely lost because I'm out of cross country, and I'm trying to find Denny Emerson, which, by the way, my heart is racing a million miles an hour because I'm about to apply for a job with Denny Emerson. Hello. So I'm walking around, and this guy comes up to me, and he goes, "Are you lost? Can I help you?" And I turn around, and Jimmy Wofford is talking to me. I mean, I'm looking for Denny Emerson, you know, and here's me on a cross country course with a piece of paper in my hand, with my resume in my hand, and I'm looking for Denny, and Jimmy goes, "That's not a paternity suit, is it?" I was like, "What?"
Did you look lawyerish?
I was so surprised, and I'm like, this is my like god of eventing, and I'm like, did he just say that to me? I'm like, no, it's a resume. But he just started to be funny. I will never forget that. That is like the connection that I've had with Jimmy Wofford. And I was like, I couldn't believe I'd read all his books. I'd watched his videos. I'd seen him coach. And he says that to me.
I almost fell off my ball.
Like, I don't know what you guys do behind closed doors. Please leave it to yourself. Quit picking on each other, but I'm just here to apply for a job. And I got the job, so that works. And I told Denny what Jimmy said, but it took months. Months later, I was like, "Hey, by the way, one time." He was like, "He did not." Oh, my gosh.
Got to make you wonder how many did show up with paternity suits on the cross-country course, doesn't it?
Well, like he said that, I'm sure they were joking because obviously that was never an issue. But just to say that to a total stranger, hello. Yeah, no comment on that, by the way.
All right, can you expect me to continue after that?
Well, give us the news on the helmet rules. We got to move on.
Yeah, some more details came out yesterday on the helmet rules. And it looks like it's what they voted on was for dressage and for eventing, particularly. Effective March the 1st for dressage. This seems boring after that story. Effective March the 1st for dressage. DR 120 requires all riders at fourth level and below to wear an ASTM SEI approved helmet at any time while mounted on competition ground. Additionally, all riders under 18, all para-equestrian riders, and all riders on non-competing horses must wear helmets. In other words, if you just bring your horse, like, you know, we used to hang out at the show and get them used to it, you're mounted, you have to have your helmet on. When a horse is competing at both the national and FEI levels, a rider must wear a helmet at all times, including in any FEI test. Now, I didn't know they could require that, so I will see how that goes. In eventing, it's even more strict. It mandates helmets must be worn by anyone on a horse at all times to be effective immediately. And this is a USEF rule, United States Equestrian Federation rule. FEI rules allowing top hats would take precedent at FEI competitions. Now, the rules regarding safety didn't stop with helmets. According to another rule, any rider with even brief symptoms of a concussion at eventing, you fall off, you have a concussion, without a loss of consciousness, will be suspended for 7 days from competition. Any loss of consciousness will require a 21-day suspension. So, boy, you fall off your horse and you're out for a minute. You're gonna be out for a minute. You know, you're gonna be out for 21 days. So,
wow.
So they really did.
Good.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing too. And they went through. They actually have what we talked about before after the helmet conference was baseline cognitive skill tests and things like that. And it went into all of that stuff, which we won't get into this morning. But that's the update from the USEF over the weekend. And now we have our first guest on. I am excited to welcome to the show Katie Lynn. I think it's Barger. We're going to find out. And she is the 2011 Miss Rodeo USA. Welcome to Horses in the Morning, Katie Lynn.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be on.
Well, congratulations. Yay for you.
Thank you. I am. I'm very excited.
You should be. You've been doing the rodeo thing for a very long time, and I know this has been one of your goals for basically your entire lifetime. And, you know, we got to know Dakota Misseldine a bit, your predecessor here last year. And, boy, did she get to do some really cool stuff, travel the entire country, going to rodeos all over the place. This must be a thrill for you, knowing you have that to look forward to this year.
Oh, I'm just very excited. You know, Dakota said that she went to about 20 states in the United States, and she went to Canada. And I'm hoping that I can do the same.
Well, you competed in rodeo, so you've been to a few rodeos in your lifetime. What kind of competing did you do?
Well, I started when I was 4, and it was just a small-town rodeo about 25 miles from my house, and I actually started in what we called walk-trot barrel racing, and you couldn't get faster than a trot, and I was unbeatable, and I won, I think, about 3 years in a row, and then I was ready to get a little bit faster, so I just gradually stepped up the pace, and I actually got into horse shows as well, and rodeo was just always right around the corner, and I was in a lot of just little teenage rodeo associations, and then I got into Little Britches Rodeo Association and did that for about 3 years, and then I joined the Arkansas High School Rodeo Association and did that for all 4 years.
Wow, so you have competed quite a bit in rodeo. What made you want to go and I know you started competing in rodeo queen competitions when you were very young too. What made you want to go that route and not just keep competing? To, you know, why the competition, the rodeo queen competition?
Right. Well, I think I was about 5 years old when I entered my first queen's contest, and I actually lost. And I just have this spot inside me where if I lose, I'm kind of like, I'm going to prove you wrong and I will win. And so I came back the next year and I won. And I'd always, you know, being the little kid on this pony going to all these big rodeo associations, the girls in barrel racing that were against me were like, oh, isn't she cute? And then after I beat him, it's like, oh, she's not that cute anymore. But rodeo queens are always there to talk to you no matter how big or little, you know, how big or little you are. And they just inspired me. I had some friends that I horse showed with that were contestants in the Miss Rodeo USA pageant. And they just kind of took me underneath their wing and taught me everything that they knew. And rodeo queen just makes you such a better person. I mean, looking back, I would not be the person I am without it. Going to a job interview is a piece of cake for me now because I've done so many queens contests. Or taking a written test and having to study for that, that's a breeze. Or giving a speech. You know, public speaking is not the easiest thing to do. And I've done a lot of speeches with Rodeo Queen, and it's just made me a very good all-around person.
What is being a Rodeo Queen into? Like, what do you have to do to win a competition?
Well, as far as the Miss Rodeo USA pageant goes, we checked in on Tuesday, and coronation wasn't until Sunday. So it was a full week of events. And in this particular pageant, we do 2 speeches. One can be on your title, your rodeo, or your sponsor. And the other speech is your platform, which mine is called Give a Smile. And it has to deal with how simple a smile is, but how powerful it is and how we all have one, but many of us take it for granted. And the reason I chose this platform was because I visited Arkansas Children's Hospital about 3 years ago. And I was in all my rodeo queen things, and I went down to play with this little boy, and he wouldn't talk, and I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, did I say something wrong? And he asked me, he said, are you an angel? And all I did was smile at him, and that was just kind of a sign for me that kids are, especially, they have a special place in my heart, and I want to be able to really affect the kids and interact with them. And so I'll be sharing that throughout this year with everybody I come into contact with. And then we also had a 15-page written test this past week at the pageant, and it included things from IPRA rodeo to the history of the Miss Rodeo USA pageant to current events to horsemanship questions. It's just a little bit of everything. And then we had an interview every morning, and we had a horsemanship pattern on Friday that we did. And then everything else was really just events where we got to know each other and the judges got to know us for who we really are.
Now, do you you actually get to ride a little bit too, right, during the competition?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, that's kind of neat. That makes it so much more fun than that Miss America thing, Katie.
Right.
You know, now you so you'll get to do this for a year. You'll get to travel around representing for a year, doing what Dakota did, right?
Yes.
Well, that's cool. That is really cool. And now I got to ask you a little bit about your horses because we are a horse show. I assume you had quarter horses, or was there something else mixed in there?
We have quarter horses, and we actually right now we have one thoroughbred. We used to have a couple more, but this one right now. So we have kind of a mixture.
Cool.
Ooh, I like it.
I forgot to ask permission. Is your thoroughbred an ex-racer, or is he of some other occupation?
You know, I'm not sure. We actually use him for the national championship chuck wagon races here in Arkansas. Yes, it is the largest equine event in the nation. It is like no other event you will ever see. And that's kind of how I got started. Was my dad used to wagon race 52-inch ponies. So when I was four, he quit and gave me one of those ponies, and that's how I got started. And about 3 years ago, we started going back, and he's really wanting to – the only thing he hasn't raced is the big horses, and he's really wanting a big horse team, so he went and bought some thoroughbreds. So
well,
maybe in a couple of years, he'll be racing them.
That's stacking the deck in your favor right there.
Yes.
How cool is that?
Unbelievable.
That's something we've never talked about on the show is chuck wagon racing. That sounds like a blast.
Chuck wagon races.
That sounds like a blast.
It really is.
Have you driven? Have you driven
no,
the race?
No, I haven't. I'm actually kind of scared to. A lot of people say, oh, Katie, you need to outride because I have a quarter horse that I run barrels on, and she's bred really good. She's double bred go man go. And got jet deck, and so she's bred to run, and she can run. But I'm just afraid to get her hurt or to get me hurt, and the adrenaline of it, I would probably be sick, to tell you the truth. I don't think I can handle the stress of it. So I'll just stay in the stands and watch.
Now, do they do pair teams, or do they do four in hands? What do they do for the racing?
There is, let's see, they start off with the Oklahoma Land Rush, and it's like the really, really small ponies, and they just run a straight line. And then they go to four-up mules, and you could line them straight across or two by two. And then what my dad does is buckboard, and that's 52-inch ponies. And then they'll do big mules, and the big mules go up this hill and around the track. And then there's the Snowy River Race, and the Snowy River Race is it's a single person, single horse race on horseback, and these horses run probably up two hills across the field. They have to swim the river and then come back on the track and cross the finish line. I want to say it's about a 2 mile race.
No, wait,
but
wait,
I'm not
wow.
sure if it's
wait.
That long.
This
they
is
have
outside,
to add a river attached to the wagon?
No, this is just a single horse. This is
oh,
just
okay.
a horse and a rider.
Okay.
So it's something that's different. It's something
it's
that's
like
different.
Jim. That's why it's called Snowy River. It's like Jim Craig out there on Denny when he's running across the field and diving
right.
in the river and then
that's
jumps
it.
Up a thing, goes down the hill. I'm with you, girl. I feel you. That's the one I would do. Let's go.
This is so cool. Watching that one. And then the final race is the classic, and that's the big horses.
Now, is this in Arkansas, you said?
Yes, it's in Clinton, Arkansas. It's called Oaf Ranch. Dan Oaf and his wife, Peggy, they started this. This past year was actually the 25th annual.
We got to go to this. This sounds like my kind of thing here.
Oh, it's
no
a
kidding.
Lot of fun.
Well, that's really cool. You know, we have to get somebody on. Jennifer, add that to your list. We have to
I
get what we, yeah, put their names down. We got to get them on the show for sure. Well, good job here. Congratulations again. And I know that you have many more interviews to go. Thank you so much for coming on so soon. I think it's so appropriate that smile is your thing this year because I'm a friend with you on Facebook. And let me tell you what, there isn't a picture on there that you're not smiling from ear to ear.
That's right. Well, thank
so
you good. So much for having me. And I look forward to a good year and Just keep up with me.
All right. We'll catch up with you later on in the year, see how you're doing, Katie.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That's Katie Lynn Barger, Miss Rodeo USA. And boy, does she sound like she was from Arkansas. How sweet can you get?
Hey. She is so sweet. You know, you go to Arkansas, see the Chuck Wagon races. No, seriously, I looked it up. Okay, chuckwagonraces.com. They've got race photos. They've got, they haven't updated their website for the 2011 schedule, only the 2010 schedule. But I can give you the phone number to the ranch in Clinton, Arkansas, and you can call them up and see what their schedule is.
Wait a minute. I want to view the race photos. I went there too, chuckwagonraces.com, and they have race photos. See. Oh, now that looks like fun. we need a chuck wagon, Jennifer. I need a
chuck
wagon.
Add that to the list of shopping.
I guess I'm going to need some ponies to pull it too, huh?
Yeah, you need the chuck wagon. You need the ponies. You're going to have, you know, some... You know, you need to be dressed to impress with this, Glenn, and you need to have the right gear. You need to look like the man from Snowy River if you're going to do this.
And apparently, judging by the pictures here, oh, my God, they get a lot of people come out to watch this thing. Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. Chuckwagonraces.com. I love it. Fantastic.
I think, you know, I'm gray. You know, I'm looking at some of the pictures of some of these guys driving the truck wagons, and they have gray beards, too. I think I fit right in, put on my cowboy hat and my boots, and I'll be out there with my pony. You know what's funny is they drive mules. I thought that was cool.
They do mules, too. Yeah, one of the races, yeah, that's right. Well, that's cool. We'll have to check that out. We'll have to keep it on. They've even got a video of the Snowy River race here, which I'm watching right now, but it's taking forever to load. So we'll have to definitely keep up with the Chuck Wagon races. Look like it's August, September time. So that gives you plenty of time to train up your team and head on out to Arkansas and get out there and do some racing.
I'm ready, but I have to bring you along. You can be my southern friend. You can teach me the southern ways down there.
I'm going to do the Snowy River race with my warm blood.
I was really surprised that she said thoroughbred. I was expecting, you know, a standardbred or something. You know, they're known more for pulling than thoroughbreds are. So I was kind of surprised, actually.
I like it. I respect that.
A new use for thoroughbreds, a new way to adopt them out for chuck wagon racing.
I think that of all the people in the entire world that I have talked to that own thoroughbreds, she is definitely the first one that says they use their thoroughbred for chuck wagon racing. I have never heard that one before. Oh, we have them. We do dressage. Oh, he's a trail horse. Oh, you know, he does it. He chuck wagon races. What? Oh, I love it. Hey, Glenn,
is there a supermarket for chuck wagons, or do you just like have to make your own?
I would imagine you could probably find it on, I don't know, Craigslist or eBay or something like that.
Chuck wagon, you know, chuckwagonsales.com or something.
Let's see.
I'm going to look that up. You do the commercial. I'm going to look for chuck wagons for sale.
Exactly. Well, our sponsor today is Pfizer Animal Health, and we want you to help protect your horse with Pfizer Animal Health's West Nile Innovator, the first vaccine developed to help protect against equine West Nile virus. The West Nile Innovator is available in several combinations with Eastern, Western, and Venezuelan equine encephalomyelitis for tetanus and tetanus for convenient protection. Contact your veterinarian about West Nile Innovator and other Innovator family vaccines, or you can learn more at PfizerAH.com. That's PfizerAH.com.
I found them, Jamie. I found at OzarkWagonSalesCompany.com. They have a fully equipped chuck wagons, and they're priced around $10,995. Now, I actually think they're the chuck wagons that you actually cook and eat out of, but I'm sure they have racing chuck wagons, too. I didn't find that. You can buy a stagecoach, too, a full-blood, you know, full brand-new stagecoach. How cool is that?
Glenn, not to be whatever, but you have those teeny little hybrid cars, and I'm imagining that the chuck wagon would cost more than your car.
Okay, I want to clarify. We don't have any hybrid cars, but we do have small cars.
Yeah. They're tiny little cars, yeah. You're not a car guy. It's cool. Not everybody has to be. But you're a chuck wagon guy, and that's the important part. By the way, I'm watching this video on the Snowy River race. This is fantastic. I mean, it's like they're chasing down the herd at the end of the man from Snowy River and running through the waters. I haven't seen anybody take anybody else's bridle off. I've seen that movie way too many times. I know it comes up every 5 seconds. But it's awesome. Horses galloping through the river, jumping, leaping. Oh, I got to do this. There's chicks and dudes, and they're all full out running, galloping up and down hills with no helmets on. Unbelievable.
All right. Well, I think our next guest is ready for us there, Jamie.
All right. Cool. Fantastic. We've got a very special guest on the line, and I say special because she's just kind of a little living angel is what I think of Molly the Pony, and obviously MollyThePony.com. Molly's not actually talking to us today. Kay is going to talk to us because Molly's a little busy with all her press interviews. But just to give you guys a little bit of background on Molly, she's the speckled gray pony. She was abandoned by her owners when Hurricane Katrina hit southern Louisiana, and she was on her own for weeks. She was then taken to a farm where abandoned animals were kind of stockpiled, and then she was attacked by a pit bull and almost died. Her right front leg became so infected that, you know, she went from vet to vet trying to find somebody to take care of him. But I guess she met a surgeon, Rustin Moore, met Molly and changed his mind. Everybody said no surgery. Well, he decided that he can go ahead and give her a prosthetic limb, and you know, Molly actually started doing very well and taking care of herself and taking care of others. I've actually met Molly at Rolex, Kentucky, and she's a bit of an ambassador as far as the horse world goes. So I would like to say good morning to Molly's owner, Kay. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
How did I do? What I miss?
You did great. A few things that I always like to correct, but that was pretty good.
Okay.
That was pretty good.
Well, what would you like to correct? What I do?
Well, you know, one thing that I like to stress to people is that, you know, this was picked up sort of by the press in the beginning about how she was abandoned. I like people to know that those of us here in New Orleans, I took all my animals with me, but a lot of people left thinking they were coming back in 3 days. Nobody realized the levee was break. So when people say that she was abandoned, I really don't think her original owners intended to abandon her. So I just like to put that out there, because when I was running our animal rescue place, people would come in to volunteer, and they would say harsh words about New Orleanians abandoning their animals. But a lot of people got plucked off of rooftops and were told, if you don't leave that animal, we're not coming back for you. So I hate to put a damper, because Molly's story is so inspirational, but it's a reminder that you should always have evacuation plans for your animals in place.
Right, absolutely. But let me ask you this. Did the previous owners of Molly ever show up to claim her?
They called, and when they finally called, they were going to come get her, and then they finally talked to me and said, can you just keep her? They haven't actually ever seen her, so in that sense, I guess you could say it's true. But they did call, and they were going to come get her, but their situation was such that they asked me if I wanted to go on keeping her. And that was, of course, all before the attack. And what the heck, when you've got 20, what's another two or three more?
Oh, jeez. So
it's horse economics.
So they don't know that she has do they know she has the prosthetic limb? Do they know
No, they actually do, and this is kind of a different part of the story that most people don't talk about, so I think this is cool. When it first happened, and I knew where it was going, because actually, you know, the way it happened was I saw what a remarkable animal she was, and you said she couldn't talk to you, but I tell you, if there was ever a pony that could talk, and you met her, It's probably her. I wait for her mouth to open and words come out sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
We told them, and their first answer was they were horrified. They said we should put her down because we were experimenting on her. Of course, that was also my vet's first answer to me, that I was terrible and horrible and it was inhumane. And what I stressed, and I think the horse world really gets this, and I say, listen to your horse. Very often we want to impose on our horse what our will is, but are we listening to what they're saying? Was that buck really because there was a discomfort? Was that shy because there was the mountain lion they thought waiting to get them? So they didn't really know Molly, I think, as well as I got to know Molly. And so they at first were not in favor of what we were going to do. But then after it all came out and Molly did so well, I did get a call from them thanking me for taking such great care of her. So.
And they haven't visited her since she's had the limb. And she's been everywhere. They've had an opportunity, right?
Yes, they have. This is true.
Okay, I'm not trying to bag on them or anything, but I want to stress that you have done a fantastic, fantastic job with this horse. I mean, you know, like you said, you already had 20. What's another couple more? You know, but that's the big heart that you have.
Right, 20 and no business. I do pony rides for a living. And speaking of which, I've got a little wagon and a stagecoach. So I was listening to your earlier segment.
You do?
Yes, I do. And I have a little team of half Hackney, half Shetlands, and another team of half Halflingers, half Shetlands. So, Molly,
Jamie, I've seen Kay at a few places now. We bump into each other all the time. She's been on the shows before. She did an interview with us. Table scoop.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Molly was probably one of the best ambassadors for the horse world at the World Equestrian Games because Molly was one of the only horses that those kids coming in could touch.
Could touch, right.
Wow.
That's true.
Got it.
Yeah, that's right, Glenn. I mean, and it was so cool. Were you there? Did you see her during one of those school groups surrounding her?
Yes. I mean, there were thousands of kids just piled around Molly.
Yep.
And Molly was just eating.
Yep. And she just sits there. She's so good about it all. And that was what was so amazing. It was like, you know, that first visit, I think, Glenn, that I had told you about during one of our interviews was, you know, when she was so good for this kid. I didn't know if this pony was going to be like this. So we went. And when she showed me, hey, yep, this is my new gig, I'm like, okay, honey, I'm behind you. Let's go. So... anyway, and she did the same thing. We were at Tuesday, we were at a local nursing home, and she went up the elevator to the second floor and into their little lounge, and then she went back down the elevator and walked through the nursing home over to the Alzheimer's unit. And you know what? It's so funny. She's so sensitive. With the people who were older but still what I call, you know, pretty much in their faculty, she's good and she's great and everything like that. But she always seems to know the difference. When she got into that Alzheimer's unit and these people were surrounding her that didn't quite have control, my God, I could see the difference. She was stock still, didn't, you know, move her head, didn't try to move her feet. And I'm just like, how does this pony know? She's just, yes, she's an angel. And I have been blessed to have her in my life. See, now I start crying.
Aww. Well, you've got a book, kind of Molly the Pony. It's called Molly the Pony, A True Story. And there is an entire full interview with you at Stable Scoop episode number 88, stablescoop.com, to kind of get more of a little bit of the background and in detail. But what I want to talk to you about is what do you guys have planned for the future? And tell us about Molly's foundation.
Okay. Well, you know, interestingly enough, right before the whole thing happened with Molly, I had started a little nonprofit called Pony Paradise with the idea of retired ponies. I actually have three that are over 40. So, one or two in their 30s, a bunch in their 20s. I don't understand when people say at 20 they're done because my guys are going strong. So is Molly, who's now 21.
But, you know, the foundation is to support Molly's travels. But for Molly, I think, you know, she and I feel like it goes beyond her. We want, you know, these retired ponies, this idea of, you know, you've got a responsibility. If these animals work for us all their lives, they deserve their retirement. You know, they deserve not to just be discarded like there's some, you know, tea kettle that I'm looking at right now. And also, you know, for kids to learn the idea of taking responsibility for the animals. And, you know, these little retired guys, even though they're retired from actually giving pony rides, the kids come out here and they're great ambassadors for learning how to handle them and groom them and things like that. So our plans, you know, are going to have to be local eventually. I pretty much leave it up to Molly. Molly does talk to me in a sense. I tell you, she puts pictures in my head. And so, you know, if she tells me I'm not ready to go on the road, we don't. So right now I'm sort of like chilling back, and we're doing a lot of local things. We're doing schools locally, nursing homes, some hospitals, you know, some events like that. We do events that support animal rescue, things like that. But right now we're pretty much staying a little bit closer at home. Mom's actually got to catch up on some of her work too.
Come on, you don't need to make money, right?
yeah, see, that's the whole thing. Being out there and doing the charity work with Molly has been great, but it's sort of like kind of left my business back here a little bit hurting. So, yeah, actually, fame is great. Fortune helps a lot, too, especially when you have plenty of horses and ponies.
Gotta feed those ponies.
Yeah.
Well, Faye, this is great, you know. She was a superstar over at the WEG, and, you know, that was one of the things that actually I had a comment about the World Equestrian Games that you and I talked about, I think, one of those days we were there, is the very little interaction of people that didn't know a lot about horses came to the World Equestrian Games. They had very little interaction where they could actually get up close and pet a horse. There wasn't a lot of that went on, and I think that the World Equestrian Games were missing that aspect, and Molly was there because she's so small and so demure. She was great with the school kids.
Mm-hmm.
By the way,
yeah,
we had a name for that, too. I got to tell you guys a funny story. When we did the my wife and I, Jennifer and I, met at the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair. Well, one of the days that we would have to do when you worked at the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair is you'd have to do a couple of weekdays where they brought kids in from schools all over the place. And we used to call it the Nipperkin Wars. And I got to tell you, we kind of hated Nipperkin War days because you just never knew what was going to happen during Nipperkin Wars. And, of course, we did Renaissance Fairs, so they were all kind of wild when they came anyway. So, you know, it must be interesting sometimes. You must have to keep an eye on the kids with Molly because kids just don't know what to do around a pony.
Yeah, I do, and it's really interesting because, you know, I've been doing these pony rides for 29 years, and, you know, out there what I'm thinking of is being even an ambassador for safe handling around horses. You know, so we're always like, careful, look, walk in front, don't walk behind. And, of course, people are like, oh, are they going to kick? And I'm going, no, but when you get in your car and you put your seatbelt on, it doesn't mean you think you're going to drive out that driveway and get in an accident. It's like a do the right thing, of course. As horse people, sometimes we don't. We can get into trouble. But with Molly, I guess the thing is I have to watch it mainly almost because, you know, a few things like kids like leaning on her because they want to love her. And I'm like, okay, she is still basically three-legged and she can kind of tip over. So it's just been a matter of some kids way too enthusiastic. You know what I'm saying? And you hate to curb the enthusiasm, but that's been the main thing that I've had to watch for is that kind of thing. Pretty much
just,
everything else.
Just keeping her safe, I guess, would be the biggest challenge with all those kids. How can people find out more about Molly? And maybe, you know, if they want to support Molly's foundation, get involved with that.
Well, we would most certainly appreciate that. You can go for more information to, of course, mollythepony.com. There, we do sell both of her books here, and that is how it helps us the most. When you buy a book through us from mollythepony.com, it comes autographed with Molly's smiley face imprint. Of course, we didn't go over that. I know most people that know her know that the bottom of her prosthetic leg is an actual smiley face. So they get an autographed Molly copy, and it's signed by she and I, and we'll even personalize it if you request it. And, you know, there's the children's book, which is really beautiful. Pam Castor did a great job on it. But then there's also Horses with a Mission by Linda and Alan Anderson, where I've written the entire story. So all of the details and facts are in there, you know, down to the nitty-gritty if they really want to know, like, how extensive her injuries were and things like that.
Yeah,
so
I would
that,
like
that
to
really
give,
helps us.
I was looking at that book online, and I would like to give everybody a mascara alert, because just the title, Horses with a Mission, makes me choke up. I mean, I've got goosebumps just looking at the cover of these horses galloping across, you know, extraordinary true stories of equine service, okay?
Yes.
I mean, come on. I would have to have a box of tissues for sure, right?
You absolutely would, Jamie. It's a great book. I mean, it's like it doesn't tell just about Molly, but it tells about, you know, a lot of other horses that have in all sorts of different ways. And it's a great reminder that, you know, sometimes, you know, we get a few people who say, well, why did you save her? You can't ride her anymore. And I just go, well, you know, she contributed to her own survival. She definitely told me that she wanted to continue to go on. And she, as far as I'm concerned, has paid the world back in spades. I mean, she has just her generosity and her giving. And so I don't think we have to look at things like that. I think you give every horse an opportunity to be what they can be, you know?
And you know, I take that comment that you just said there about, you know, why save her? You can't ride her anymore. I can't tell you how many horses we've had into their 30s and 40s that we couldn't ride anymore. We didn't put them down just because we couldn't ride them anymore.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's poor argument right there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I know that sometimes financial things make it hard for people to do that, but I think it's also important for you to have a game plan for when your horse gets to that stage, if you absolutely are not somebody who can afford to keep one on, that you have a good game plan. You know, just abandoning it when it's been your good and faithful companion is, in my eyes, not an option. And there's been many days we've eaten beans, but the horses are still out there eating their equine senior and stuff.
Girl, I feel you. I totally understand. I'm moving around in my early 20s. I had, you know, I would get a job, and then I would drive there, find a place to take my horse, and, you know, move up there, and then maybe if I could find a place to sleep.
Exactly.
Always came first.
Well,
you get the nicest barn, the nicest place to stay. Me, I'll be fine. Don't worry about me. I'm just going to be in the car.
Well, that's how it is when we're on the road. You know, before we were able to save up the money, you know, the books that we sold in the beginning purchased the trailer that she now travels in. So, I mean, the books and the donations. And I put my foot down because my stock trailer that I just run around town was not cutting it for her. I was just like, I said, I can't travel the country anymore in this stock trailer. Didn't have much luck getting any trailer companies to sponsor her, but we saved up our pennies, and I went all the way to Amarillo, Texas from New Orleans to get her trailer. And before that, I'd pull up to some place. I'd make sure she had a stall where she could get up and down to rest, which is so important for her. And sometimes I'd be sleeping in the back seat of my truck.
I know.
Jamie.
We've all been there. We've all been there. Horses come first, especially, you know, to listeners of this show. But I really, you know, I want to thank you so much, Kay, for what you've done. And everybody, please go visit mollythepony.com, buy the books. They make great gifts, you know, they're heartfelt. And we really appreciate everything you do. You're affecting, you know, kids everywhere and helping all sorts of people. So mollythepony.com for the full interview. You can go for another different interview. Go to stablescoop.com, episode 88. Thank you so much, Kay.
Thanks, Jamie. Glenn.
Bye, Kay. Right. We'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely.
Well, that was Kay, Molly the Pony's mom. You know, you really wanted Molly to talk, didn't you? You were bucking for that, but didn't get it.
Yeah, I don't understand why. It's like when we talked to Charles, why couldn't he put Zenyatta on the phone? Why can't Raphael Valle put Ivory Powell on the phone? And why can't we talk to Molly?
You know, you went 2 days without mentioning Zenyatta. This week, we actually got through Monday and half the show today, and I was keeping track. I was going to see how long this week you went without mentioning Zenyatta.
Listen here. She's my can I tell you how cool it is to have a dog named Zenyatta? I think it's awesome. And it's funny because I have the Zenyatta hat, and people are like, you have a hat named after your puppy? I'm like, no, idiot. Have you never heard of Zenyatta? And then I start on my soapbox, and then it gets ugly.
Well, yeah, I wish more I had than one. Today's show's been all about smiles, apparently, and I wish I had a song that had smiles in it. I didn't know we were going to be talking about smiles today. So today's song is called Mirror, Mirror. I guess you could be smiling in the mirror. But it's actually a song we haven't heard before here on Horses in the Morning by Pfizer Animal Health. And it's from Mary Ann Kennedy. And here is the song, Mirror, Mirror. Of course, you can buy all of her music at MaryAnnKennedy.com. Well, you're listening to Horses in the Morning by Pfizer Animal Health. You've got Jamie Jennings, myself, Glenn the Geek, and Jennifer H. over there in the control room keeping us straight. And that's tough to do. You're wired here this morning, Jamie.
I'm sorry, I just barely made it back. I was having one of those moments where I saw the puppy, Boomer, get up and start walking circles here in the room.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, no. So I ran over, I get him, I sprinted, I grabbed him, I threw him outside, I ran back over here, and you were talking to me. So, what?
I said, I don't know what I said, actually. I said, I was just saying that you are wired this morning. You're funny today.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you very much. It's only funny because you laugh at me. But, yeah,
you know,
I'm feeling good. I'm over my sinus infection for the most part. And so, man, feeling you never understand how nice it is to be healthy until you're sick. And then you're like, God, this is miserable. I'm going to start appreciating more when my nose doesn't run. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm very glad that you're getting over your sickness before we get together this weekend, because I really didn't want it. So thank you very much for doing that. We have our next guest coming up here in a couple of minutes by the name of Shauna Koresh. She's been on our show before. We talked about her a little earlier in the day. She started the training method back in the 90s called on-target training, or clicker training, which Jennifer has used quite extensively. And, you know, it's used by professionals, Olympic-caliber riders all around the world, as well as amateur riders. And what it is, it's a reward reinforcement training system that dramatically accelerates the training process. And she'll be on to talk to us today. We're going to talk about reward versus bribing. So it should be an interesting conversation today. But if you have questions for Shauna, she can help you with your training questions. Just give us a call at 347-637-3238, and we'll get you lined up to talk to Shauna. You know, while we're waiting for her, Jamie, I found this thing yesterday. It was posted on Facebook. It was 20 facts about social media that will make you go, wow. And, you know, obviously new media and social media is what we're all about here at the Horse Radio Network. We wouldn't exist if it wasn't for that. Mm-hmm. In 2010, these are some 2010 statistics. It's going to blow you away. There were 88 million domain names registered in 2010. That's 88 million new website names.
What? In 2010?
2010, yes.
No. I'm reading it. It says at the end of 2010.
Well,
not 88 million in 1 year, right?
No, 88 million in 1 year, because as of December 2010, there were 255 million websites live on the Internet.
There are
152 million blogs and 255 million websites. Some other numbers that are just blow your mind. The average number of videos watched on YouTube in a day is 2 billion. Number of videos.
These are
ridiculous. I'm not kidding.
Numbers.
I know. The number of videos watched on Facebook is actually higher than YouTube, and it's 2.5 billion a day.
Oh,
is that
my
incredible?
Gosh. I contributed to like four minutes of video on the entire Internet. I have got to get a little more savvy with the whole social media thing. My gosh.
Wrap your head around this. Every minute there are 35 hours of video uploaded to YouTube. That's 2,100 hours of video every hour uploaded to YouTube. That's 50,000 hours of video every day. And here's another number that'll blow you away. Where was this one here? The average number of photos uploaded to Facebook. Now, we do upload a lot of photos on our page, but the average number of photos uploaded to Facebook per year, 36 billion.
Oh, my God. Wait. I got to ask a question. 36
yes?
billion photos are uploaded every day.
Every year. Every year. Every year.
Okay. How many of those have actually been viewed? Who cares? I mean, is there a number of people who have viewed, and is there a number of, like, videos and photos that nobody cares about, nobody watched?
I'm sure that's
true. I'd like
true.
To know those numbers.
Your mother, everybody's mother probably looked at them. You know, it's weird now, isn't it weird? Did your mother on Facebook?
Yes, my mother is on Facebook because of this radio show. But, you know, other than that, I am so glad my father's not on Facebook. He doesn't need to see what goes on. My God, that'd be horrible.
So you had to take those pictures down when your mother came on, huh?
Oh, she doesn't care. But my daddy, girls can get away with a lot more than their mama than their daddy, and I hope he's not listening right now, because your mama knows stuff about the daughter, and the daddy knows stuff about the boys, I think. I think that's how it works.
But I think there's somebody that can join us in this conversation. I introduced her a couple minutes ago. Shauna is on the line. Hi, Shauna, and good morning.
Well, good morning. I'm not sure I want to get in that conversation.
Sorry, Shauna, you're in now.
It's pretty fascinating, though, some of those statistics. And you do wonder how many aren't seeing.
Yes, that is true. And, you know, especially those people that are putting, well, you do know with YouTube, of course, how many people are watching your videos, but you don't know with pictures so much. And maybe that's a good thing sometimes. Maybe that's a good thing. Well, Jennifer's going to join us here, too, and we're going to change the subject now back to horses again, but I thought you would find those numbers fascinating. Jennifer, when we talked about having Shauna on today, you had an idea for a topic. Go into that a little bit with us.
Well, I thought it would be fun to talk about reward versus bribe, because I know with operant training, that's a correct term to call this, right? Operant training?
Yes.
Timing is key. And I know when I've used it with horses, that was a little bit of a struggle to get the knack of that. And one of the comments that we had the last time you were on, last month, made me think of that, the difference between rattling a feed can in front of your horse and trying to get him to walk on the horse trailer versus using a food reward in operant training. Can you kind of walk us through the difference in those two things?
Yes, it's and the difference, frankly, is black and white. And I've had people say the same thing, Jennifer, where they go, "Well, we try using food, and just having the food as a bait station."
Yeah.
There's several components there that that make it a faulty system. One is as a training, and it's technically, while it is operant training, it's also really operant conditioning. And I think the operant word is operant, is that as we learn to, or probably actually conditioning in this situation, as they're learning to operate on their environment, we're conditioning them. And if you're just holding a feed bucket, you're kind of saying, what's your choice? What's your choice? But when they've been conditioned for something, it is like with a target. There is, just the other day, frankly, it was one of Hap Hansen's horses, who is an international show jumper, and they had a horse who, last time she went to load on the big trailer, it took an hour and a half, and she wouldn't budge. And Lisa kind of brought out some food and tried to bait her, essentially, and she wasn't having it. It was like she was afraid of the ramp. It's the big trailer. It's the big semi-trailer, which most of them don't have a problem with, usually.
No, those things are luxury accommodations.
Yeah, exactly. They're like walking into a barn, for goodness sakes. But it seemed to be the ramp was her hang-up. And she's a really willful horse, and I'd worked with her with the she had issues with shots. And so they tried everything. They tried the bucket and the carrots and the trying to get her to go, and that wasn't going to work. She tried everything. She said this horse wouldn't respond at all. She wouldn't kick out into it. She wouldn't do anything. And so it was 2 days ago. She was getting ready to load to go up to Thermal, which is our show jumping kind of winter circuit, kind of like West Palm mm-hmm. Beach. So she was getting about to get loaded, and Lisa said she lost sleep for 3 nights about this.
Oh, gosh.
because she just was so, puts everybody behind to wait for an hour and a half. Will it be longer? Will it be shorter? Will she do it? So I just went and did the target, and the target was the key, because the target has a good association with lots of other things. So as she's seeing it, she's not going, I'm not really hungry. She's thinking the target equals good things. And so I held the target out in front of her, and you could see she kind of looked down at the mat a little bit that they lay out and smelled the ramp, and then she made the decision. She walked right in, no sweat. But it was a decision that it was the association with the target isn't necessarily about food anymore. So whether she's hungry, because let's face it, most of us keep our horses really well fed. It's not... It's just what we do. So as they're looking at going, do I need food right now? No, I'd rather not go in the trailer. But her association instead was, oh, I love the target. The target's a good thing. I don't even remember why I like the target, but I want to touch the target. So it changes that. And also it helps. And that, I have dozens of examples of that. There's times when my horses have been, when they wouldn't eat food, but they'll still do the training. But if you're just holding the baby carrot thing, it's a very, very different thing. The other, because it is all just a food, not food, don't really care about that. But with the conditioning, it kind of changes their mindset, and they move into a cooperative good place because good things come of it. And so another thing is the to fade out the use of the crinkling, the shaking, the food is really, really hard to do. When if they're doing it to fade out a target, which is kind of something that's been conditioned or whatever you might be using, is much easier to do because it becomes conditioned. They're not necessarily thinking through it. Just like we train our horses in everything we do. When we put our leg on, our horses pretty much move forward. They're not thinking literally, well, you know what, if I don't move forward, I'm going to have more leg. And if I don't respond to that, I'm probably going to be hit with a riding stick or the spur or whatever it is. They just think, oh, leg forward, leg forward, leg forward. And that's kind of how it gets with, you know, target forward, target forward, target forward. So it becomes...
Let me see if I can get it all concisely in my little brain. So whatever, we'll use getting on the trailer as an example, although I hate that one because everybody just does the trailer thing to death. Your horse walks up to the trailer, and he's a difficult loader. You rattle a can of grain in front of him. His mindset is the human is asking me to do something that I perceive as unpleasant. The unpleasantness I perceive is stronger than my need for food. So it's unsuccessful. Versus the other way, where you're using the operant training and the food reward properly, the horse walks up to the trailer and sees his target near the trailer. His mindset is, ooh, I want to touch that target because something wonderful is liable to happen.
Right.
Whether it's a scratch under the chin or a treat or whatever he's been trained to use. You've got the horse thinking towards the target versus thinking towards his perceived enemy object. So is the target an essential part of operant training, or can you use operant training without a target per se, an object?
Yes.
Now we're getting off the whole bribery thing, but, you know.
That's a lot of good points there you bring up. Yes, first of all, and you're exactly right. So as opposed to looking at, and I'll go back to the target just for a second, but as opposed to looking at the trailer going, oh, I hate the trailer, and focusing on that part of it, they see the target and think, oh, I love the target. And so the trailer becomes more of an incidental, and the target is something I hadn't seen this mare in months, and so I just walked up to her stall because I realized that loading's about to happen and it was a big issue and I was contacted. And so I just walked up to her stall and clicked her once I went in and she turned her head away right away because she remembers that, you know. So she turned her head right away to think, okay, I don't want to beg, you know, and her eyes watching. Well, she's begging. She's just begging differently. And she, as soon as I clicked, she she nickered and kept her head away. You know, and then the next three times I did it, she just, you know, now it's a target. She targeted, she nickers. She was just really pleased to be doing it. So as I go out to the trailer, she's like, I love this stuff. So the target becomes the focus. The trailer's more of an incidental, so you can actually take her mind off of it. And then to address the other situation about the target, yes, you don't need to use the target. The target, I find, is a really good focal point, and I use it in a lot of behaviors. But then there's a lot of things, like, you know, if I'm working, you know, let's say the issues in under saddle one, I will still train the target because it kind of is a step in teaching them how to learn, you know, kind of a good transition to teach them consequence. You know, if I touch this, I can get reinforced. It kind of sets up the working behavior. But there's a lot of behaviors where a target is not appropriate, or just even with the trailer. You don't have to use a target. It helps to distract her a little bit, but you could just teach her to walk with you and lead. But sometimes then the focus going to the target helps. But
I was watching one of your videos online of I believe it was a mule that was having trouble with a wash stall. And the horse had obviously been schooled in that he understood what the clicker meant. He obviously understood, and there's a little voiceover on there. And you're right, in that case, she did not use a target. The mule knew how to lead properly, but did not want to go in the wash stall. So when they got to that point where the mule wanted to stop, if the mule made an effort towards leading properly, the mule got the click. So the mule understood leading properly is the goal. Getting in the stall is not the goal. Leading properly is the goal. So the, So the behavior, leading properly, was a skill that the animal knew very well and was very successful at, and you were able to reward that behavior. So am I getting it right that the handler did not say to the mule, go in the wash stall, because that was not a behavior that the mule understood. The mule did understand lead properly. So was that the right, that was the right way to approach that? So if you had the horse trailer issue and you didn't have a target, leading properly is the behavior you're asking for, not load in the trailer, because that's like when you've, when you first start with clicker training, you don't start with touch the target. You start with a naturally occurring behavior that the horse already knows. Is that, is, am I getting that right?
Well, I start with, I start with teaching them just to turn their head away so they learn boundaries and manners.
But they do, but they're going to do that anyway because you're standing there and you're non-interactive. He's going to get bored and turn his head away.
Yes. And
so
then
you're rewarding a natural behavior, a successful behavior.
Yes. And then I do go right to teaching the target, but it is not, and I just think it helps to make the whole big process easier. But who they really are building the association with is our presence. So another thing I do when I'm doing the first turning the head away and the target, just in the stall still, you know, this first really baby week of it, I start walking around the stall and looking for them. I click when they move towards me because I want them to learn to stay with me. And then I stop and look for them to turn their head away. So they learn to follow and stay with me without mugging me and pushing.
That's,
I work on that right away because I realize.
That's where Beaker's stuck. He's into the mugging system. If he was on a dark street corner, boy, he'd be all over you.
I think that's a common thing that we do. I even do it. I have my horse Bugs, and the other day I was like, I got to go back to reminding you. He's a mouthy guy anyway. Like, he's going to eat his lead rope. He's going to eat. He wants to touch everything that's around him by himself, whatever. And so he really kind of needs to be reinforced with turning his head away because while we worked it, I kind of realized, but he's still, you know, his nose is the first to everything he checks out. You know,
and I was like,
we need to remind you of that because he kind of has forgotten that a little bit. But,
So if we go back to rattling the grain can to get in the horse trailer and it's successful, because sometimes that really does work. So go through why that does work sometimes.
Because
for some horses it consistently works. Try to lead them on the trailer, nothing. Get the feed can, they always go on.
Right. And sometimes that will work. And it is, they are certainly doing it not for you, they're doing it for the food. And I think that that is where we present a problem, is that I think that all training, while I use food as part of the training equation, they are not working for the food, they're working for me. And that's how I think that's where the change comes in. So, and also, let's say down the road, so that's the big, catch there, is if you constantly are using the food, they are working for the presence of the food. And that means you're going to need to have the presence of the food at all time. With clicker training, target training, operant conditioning, as you go down the road, they're not working for the food. They will work when they're not hungry, they will work when there's no food present, and they'll work for everybody and everything. You know, so it's not a condition of going, well, if you don't have food, I'm not doing it. But when you are dangling the carrot, as it were, in front of them, or, you know, on the vice side of that, the opposite side of that, if it's only going to load if they have a whip, you know, you've got to have something instead of just learning to load in the trailer. Because ideally what I like them to do is to load in the trailer. I may or may not feed you. you know, but you will, and in the beginning, you know, if let's say I faded out the, you know, the target and everything, and they just load in the trailer, you know, I will sometimes come up there with a feedback and go, that was a good decision you made, but you made the decision first. I offer reinforcement later, because that's ultimately what we want them to do, is to just to listen and want to please you and want to do what you want to do, or to go into a new situation, you know, let's say all of a sudden something is going on and they're, you know, let's say they're injured and we got to get them in the trailer and food is the last thing on their mind, you know,
right.
But they will still work through the through the operant conditioning. That I've had horses that are rattled as can be, and to bring out, I'm going back to the target, but even your presence is the same really as the target.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had horses just spookiness, you know, wound high as a kite.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just, and they know the target, and you just bring out that target, go target, you'll see them lower their head and touch that target, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it takes their mind off whatever has them so frantic and wound up.
That's the conditioning part of it, in that when done well and over a period of time, it becomes sort of semi-hardwired into their system versus simply
yes.
a distraction.
Exactly, and it becomes really hardwired in their system. I mean, they just... When you start working with a horse like this, and this is kind of a weird part of it, that when I first started doing this, I was focusing always on a task, you know, because at SeaWorld, that's kind of what you did. You focused on what you needed to get done. And
mm-hmm.
and our relationships were already based in positive reinforcement, so our animals already really liked us and enjoyed our presence. So that part was a gimme. And then I started working with horses, and I recognized horses don't, by and large, think that we're the greatest thing out there. They'll do what we want, but they're not running up going, oh, goody, the humans are here. You know, some are, but there's a lot of them. They're like, oh, I'm just going to be out in the pasture and not let you catch me. You know,
mine does. He's loving me.
See, and yes, I love when they come up, and that's what mine. You'll see them just, you know, trying to get the grooms out of the way, going, I have to see her, you know, and it's kind of twisted, but I love that. You know, so they come out and they think, whatever you want me to do, I can't wait to do whatever you want me to do. What is our new thing? You know, and those lessons
Shauna,
get harder and harder as we progress, and they still want to do them.
Shauna, no, see, what my horse sees is I walk outside and he's like, yay, she's here, and he runs up to me, and what he sees me as is my hair is the top of a carrot. I'm currently wrapped in a peppermint wrapper, and, you know, I've got, you know, sweet seed shoes on. So that's pretty much what my horse sees when he sees me. So,
you're a walking granola bar.
I am a walking piece of candy to that horse, okay? I mean, he's going to get diabetes from all the peppermint. So I've loved what you have told us about. And, you know, as far as the reward versus bribe goes, guilty as charged. Of a little bit of all of it. So,
you know what, though? I bet, and you don't really realize this until you get, you know, until something happens, but there's been times when my horses, both of them shipped and they were up all night. They weren't hungry at all because they had been, and I've taken them out and they've worked to the letter. They've loose. You know, I've asked them on a loose rein. I was about to go in and do a demo. And I asked them with nothing on them in a big open ring to do stuff. They did everything up to snuff, and neither of them was hungry. You know, so while it starts off like that, they don't really remember why it is they like you so much. They just do, you know, and that's what's really, that's the good point where you get to. So while he may see you as all that, he may see you as all that, even when he's not hungry.
Well, Shauna, you know what? It's just been awesome having you on again, as usual. And I know that a lot of our listeners are so into what you say, and they listen over and over again. So we do really appreciate you being a part of the show this morning. We will talk to you again, I guess, in about a month. We're going to try to have you on every month and have listeners call in with questions next time and interact with you a little bit more. So we sure do appreciate you being on, and we will talk to you soon. Give us your website real quick so people can find out where to find you.
Okay, the easiest one to go to is, because I have a few, but they all go to the same place, is Ask Shauna. So just askshauna.com, and you can ask questions there. But I would love for people next month, when I'm back on, to ask questions, because it's a great way to interact and direct you know, answer things, questions people have.
There
and
you go, Facebook folks.
And I want to remind everybody, too, that Shauna joins us for Horse Tip Daily on a regular basis, so you can find all of her tips over there at horsetipdaily.com. Thank you, Shauna, for being on. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love that, and thank you.
Well, you know, thank Jennifer, too, for joining in on that conversation. You know, when it comes to the serious, deep-down training stuff, we resort to Jennifer. We throw her the ball. And she takes it and runs with it. So thank you to all. You know, we had an interesting lineup of guests today. We were a little bit all over the board, weren't we?
Absolutely. And, you know, again, the news topic of the day is that Jimmy Wofford became the third candidate to announce his application for the job of event coach for the U.S. Equestrian Federation event and technical advisor, Chef de Keep. How do you say that, Jennifer?
Chef de Keep, yeah.
Chef de Keep. Yesterday. So, you know, we're just going to, we'll keep you guys up to date on that and how that's panning out with David O'Connor. I mean, these are the biggest names in the sport of eventing are all vying for the same job. Jimmy Wofford, David O'Connor, Philip Dutton, Bobby Costello. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. We've also learned today that you have to wear your helmet. Glenn is going to buy a stagecoach. And Molly the Pony is a hero, and how to clicker train. Wow.
I actually was looking around while you were talking about training. I was looking around at the various chuck wagons and things I could buy. I did find one that looked in pretty good shape for about half that price at about $5,500. So,
wow.
And that was a racing chuck wagon, too. That wasn't some of the other chuck wagons I found were really that. They were chuck wagons, the kind that, you know, you actually cooked out of.
The one you need, Glenn, the one you cook out of.
Yeah, I know. They're cool because they come with all the copper pots and pans. They look really neat. I just looked. They had copper pots and pans and all the – it was cool. It was cool. So one of these days I want to do that. You know, we're gonna take a Horse Radio Network trip to a dude ranch, and we're going to invite all our listeners along and everything. And I'm going to go in the chuck wagon, and I'm going to learn to cook chuck wagon cowboy style. So,
Jennifer and I'll be on horses. I recommend, you know, I love Triangle X up in Jackson Hole. You can ride the wagon. Jennifer and I will hop on the horses and gallop to meet you.
Okay, good. So you'll be out there. You'll be out there rounding up cattle, and I'll be feeding you the cattle.
Do chuck wagons serve vegetarian food? I don't know. You're going to have to work on that.
Well, they always have baked beans, but they usually have bacon in it. So probably there isn't a lot of salads on a chuck wagon, I don't imagine.
Just give me some rice or some potatoes.
Bread and rice. You can eat the Mexican rice and the cornbread. Yep, you can have that. Well, this has been fun. We'll be back again tomorrow with another show. And, of course, like we say every day, you can listen to all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio.
Absolutely. I'm trying to look up what we have coming on tomorrow. Jennifer, what do we have tomorrow?
Oh, tomorrow we've got Sean Flaherty is going to be stopping by to see us and talk a little bit about what's going on in his little reigning world. And it's Wednesday, so it's Horse Health Day.
Wait, now, when you say Little Reigning World, isn't he the dude that won like $6 million last year?
That's the
one. Yeah, their Little Reigning World is much bigger than ours.
their Little Reigning World is the sport we all need to get into to make some cash, is what I'm getting. You know, it's that or riding bulls.
Percentage of the gross national product right there.
Yeah.
How about we say they're profitable horse world, because they're the only ones that actually do make profits at this.
I think so. I know. We'll have to check it out. And I'll ask, you know what I'm going to ask him? How to get into reining. How does one start in reining? Because I think I'm going to transfer my loyalty and start making some money at this. If you missed the live show, check out recorded versions on our websites, iTunes, affiliate websites. We will be back tomorrow morning with a look at reining. So goodbye, everybody. Say goodbye, Glenn.
Bye, everybody. Have a safe ride and wear your helmet.